into The Queer Truth, the podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing. She's back. Denise!
Hey! Hey, I'm so happy to be back in Vienna.
Are you?
Yeah, I am.
Back in Vienna?
I know, right?
After all the brownness that surrounded you for weeks.
Oh, man, that was beautiful. That was really wonderful. But yeah, no, I'm happy to be back in Vienna. I live here for a reason. I have freedom of movement. and I have chosen Vienna. So, I mean, as much as I may critique it and complain and all that stuff, you know, I came here for,
volition.
Yeah, my own volition. And I stay here of free will. Even after having 5 weeks in the Caribbean.
5 weeks in the Caribbean with Black people, brown people of Indian descent, brown people of indigenous descent.
Refugees from Venezuela.
Oh my goodness. It's gotten that bad, hasn't it?
It has gotten that bad. That's happening. That's really because people don't have resources there. So they're coming into the neighboring countries.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's funny. Black girl dangerous. Isn't that what she said? What the name of the blog is?
BGD? Destiny. Yeah. BGD. Mm-hmm.
So they had a comic up recently that there was a brown girl in the comic mad that a white person didn't understand something. And then a Black girl came and sat down and she was telling the Black girl about it. And then the brown girl did the same thing that the white dude did and didn't understand how she was repeating the same behavior of throwing all women of color, if you will, into one pot rather than distinguishing the experiences of Black women from brown women. Mm-hmm. And then this funny thing happened on the Today Show last week. Oh. Where
with that fresh hairstyle
that everybody I'm sure has seen now the video, the Today Show on NBC. It's a morning show that airs Monday through Friday. They have a resident fashion beautician, whatever she is, Deepika Mutyala, and she was showing how you can do your favorite summer styles in 60 seconds. And they had a beautiful Black woman on there with her natural curls, and she killed the curls.
She was like, what you need is this frizz. And I'm going to give you a little bit of a crackhead edge. I'm going to just,
It was just so bad. I could not believe the Today Show did that. And I think the host even said, well, it's a good thing you're so beautiful, isn't it? To the model. You can wear anything.
She is gorgeous. It didn't matter what you had done to her hair. She'd still be gorgeous.
Exactly. And so Deepika tried to make up for it. She has a tweet. Quote, I can't even begin to describe how sad I've been the past 48 hours. I acknowledge and appreciate everyone's feedback and am deeply sorry for what happened. I'm a huge advocate for diversity, so offending anyone breaks my heart. Learning from this experience and promise to do better. Love you all, and I will do everything I can to make this right. So I'm not super decor with the apology, but I appreciate the sentiment that she was trying to listen to people on Twitter who were, screaming at her quite loudly. So she does a video where she goes into a salon.
Natural hair salon, right?
It's called Natural Hair 101. Mm-hmm. And, it opens up with like this zoom in of all the natural hair products. And the model Malia, the person she killed, or the girl she killed.
Her hair who killed. Yeah.
She's sitting in the chair, and I think it's Tierra Monet's salon, actually. I think Tierra is the one who owns the salon. Anyway, so all of these beautiful Black women with their natural hair in different forms. Tierra, who owns the salon, actually has cornrows underneath a wig. And I think the salon is called the Crown Collection, in case anyone is interested. So, they go through this whole thing where they're kind of making light of what she did on the Today Show and trying to explain to her in their Natural Hair 101 how you take care of natural hair. And they're like, what do you need? And she says, what do you need? And it's like tools, products, time. That's what they bring it down to. How did you feel about that video, though?
I mean, so that video right there, first of all, I think that Deepika, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
I feel like, she's doing all the right things. An apology is never perfect, but she didn't deflect and she didn't belittle, which was great. Mm-hmm. So there you have it. And then I love the fact that she followed up by putting on people that have been doing it that know more than she knows.
Absolutely.
I don't really think there's one way to do natural hair, right? Like when I went and got my locks done, I went to a salon with a guy who was coming from Atlanta. And so that's a little fancier
yeah,
than I wanted to go. And I didn't know that people had fancy locks in Atlanta, yes, you know, where you would have like a fine tooth comb and like 8 pounds of products and your locks would be looking like Shirley Temple curls.
Right.
Like I didn't even know locks like that existed.
Mm-hmm.
So when he tried to put that on my head, it was really upsetting because, you know, I was coming from another school of thought on what locks should look like and what I wanted my own locks to look like. So that's the same if when I had an afro or when I had braids or whatever. There are certain rules for dealing with black hair, of course, if you want to keep it
right.
Intact. But at the same time, there's no one way that people do it. Even right. in kind of like a subsection of natural hair, which is just locks, there's like 10 ways that I've seen locks look and be taken care of just off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, I would be a little afraid to go back to my short natural, which I eventually will. One day I will cut my locks. Mm-hmm. But the way I was wearing my short natural back in the day and the way people wear their naturals today, I might have a problem. Because I was a wash and go kind of person. I would wash right. it, put a little conditioner on it, and have my natural curls come out. I'm done. My barber would hook up my little tape up.
Uh-huh.
Got my sideburns. Good to go. Uh-huh. So I think my issue, though, with Deepika's... Okay, so they end the video where they're talking about natural hair. They do end it with putting her in the chair, which is really cute. Mm-hmm. And basically redoing what she did to Malia. Like, they put a horrible side ponytail... They separate her bangs. It's cute. She looks a hot mess in the end. My only worry is that there's no context for why hair is so important to Black women. That doesn't seem to come up at all. I mean, they're making it very fun right. and light, you know, and Black, I appreciate
Black
that.
Women are penalized for their hair, especially their natural hair, in ways that other women are not penalized for it. Like, there's a special anti-Blackness in hair policy.
Right.
That when you look at institutional hair policies of schools or military or what have you, there's an institutional bias against Black hair, especially natural Black hair.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this has a real effect for us. This has stopped us from getting positions, jobs, internships, whatever. And so it has a very tangible use for us. And so, you know, this aesthetic politic isn't really taken lightly by Black women, and nor should it be.
Right.
Because it is so consequential for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think it was just important to mention that because, you know, even just recently we posted about this school in Kentucky that had a policy that, you know, you couldn't wear any natural hair styles from cornrows to locks to afros. And then parents were up in arms about it. And then they tried to do like this backpedal thing that the policy was only for boys. Well, that doesn't make it better.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a racist policy. But I'm sure there are some people out there who like to, you know, those people who say, if Black lives matter so much, why don't you talk about Black on Black crime? I'm sure there's some people out there who would fuss at us right now because, as everyone knows by now, hopefully, the Olympics are taking place in Rio de Janeiro. The first mm-hmm. time that the Olympics have taken place in South America. Rio, it hasn't been perfect and there's plenty of things to complain about, but I'm still very proud of Rio pulling it off. I'm very, very happy about the opening ceremony where they didn't shy away from a very clear history of Brazil that included slavery. And we have the most diverse team. The U.S. gymnastics team for women is the most diverse team that gymnastics has ever seen, with two Black women, Gabby Douglas and Simone Biles.
In the one and two positions, no?
And yes. And then we have the first Latina also on the
yes.
team.
She's so yes.
cute. She, mm-hmm. there's a, if you want to go find her, there's a great GIF of her where she's about to get on the balance beam when they're still competing in the all around competition. And she says to herself right before she mounts, you got this. No, she says, I got this. And then gets on the beam. It's dope. And then we have a Jew. And a white girl, the two who very smart brother said they would be invited to the cookout. So some of you might remember in 2012 during the Olympics in London, there was a lot of backlash for the way Gabby's hair looked. And
yes.
yet again, people have gone to Twitter not to talk about her gold medal, but to talk about her hair and how her edges aren't laid. Why? Why do Black women do this?
Well, I look, like, you know, it's almost like, you know, going to Miss Seeley.
USA.
For marital advice before she got woke, right? Miss Seeley said, hit her. before she got woke. I mean, like, that's just the nature of it. That's how I view that. You know, Black women, there's some Black women, and this is really sad, there's some Black women that don't even know the texture of their natural hair. There are some Black women that haven't had edges for years, right? So all that is like either a wig or a lace front or pasted on or bonded or what have you.
Ugly.
There's some Black women who are suffering from all manner of chemical burns and alopecia on their scalp. And this is common. I'm not saying some as in, you know, one or two. I'm saying this is a common thing.
Yes.
Because of the amount of manipulation we are forced to do with our hair in order to sort of blend, get jobs and hang out.
Mm-hmm.
Right. In mainstream society, in mainstream American society, you know, and let's not talk about what you have to do if you're in the entertainment industry. I mean, Naomi Campbell has come out about her situation with her hair, which doesn't exist. And the best friend on Moesha, I'm blanking on her name.
I remember her. Yeah.
Her and Brandy had beef.
Yeah.
She came out about it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Also basically has no hair, right? Like no edges, you know, I mean, and it's sad and people joke about that. So then you get hurt doing these things, doing these manipulations, and then you become the butt of jokes.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like insult to injury. Like, you know, we're dealing with like cancerous chemicals. We have higher rates of almost everything. It's Yeah.
I wonder, though, sometimes, like, why is it that I was a huge fan of Gabby, still am a huge fan, and supported her fiercely in 2012. And I wonder, you know, she got some backlash for not putting her hand over her heart while the anthem was playing when they were on the podium.
Immediately. She did, but she just didn't do it immediately while they snapped the photo.
Right. Which, how, like, there's a lot going on. People need to realize that there's a lot going on. And most people will never know the feeling of the extreme pressure, first of all, to be performing at that level and then to also succeed. I just wonder why people are so much more supportive of Simone Biles, who has a story that I love. I would almost tend to say people like, especially a certain hue of people, like Simone Biles' story because it fits some kind of perception that,
mm-hmm.
you know, she does have the story of the Black father who was absent and the Black mother who...
It's a comfortable story for white America. They can relate to that person. They know that person.
They think they do.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, that person only lives in their imagination.
Right.
Right. I mean, Simone had a comfortable middle-class upbringing with her grandparents.
So
yeah.
What people forget, right? Her grandparents adopted her. So mm-hmm. it's still family.
Right.
It's not like she went into other huge household.
Right.
She stayed in a Black household in Texas and her parents, they took care of her and supported her. And I'm very excited for both girls. I find it very disappointing that the support that they've received has been very different.
You think it's been different?
I
think that there's been this stuff about Gabby's hair. And I think, you know, and I love that they seem close and that they get along, especially when, you know, it's hard when you compete on that level and when you have worked so hard. And you just happen to be in the same era as a motherfucking Simone Biles. Like, the hell, bitch?
Well, had her year. She had her year. She had her year in 2012.
She did have her year. But it's like, you know how that could easily turn into a Tonya Harding,
ooh.
Carrie. Yeah. You know how that could easily turn into, let me get this crowbar real quick.
Whoa, let's not go there.
Right. But I'm just saying,
could,
like that
could,
level
yes.
of, especially since that level of beef is so encouraged, especially within Black female communities, Black women's communities. The I don't want anybody to think it's okay to call women female, so I had to like rephrase that's not apparently happening. If there was a sliver of that, you know, it'd be all over. They would love that shit. Yeah, she did have her year in 2012, and it's nice that Simone Biles is whatever, but it's a lot. You know, people like the shiny new thing. That's all it is.
You think?
But
maybe.
I think also Gabby's edges. Here's the thing about processing hair. And this is why I like have had one perm in my life. And everyone was like, oh, it's so long. You know why it was long? Because I spent my whole life being natural. You know why it's healthy? Because I spent my whole life being natural. And if I kept having it with I have like 4C hair. If I kept getting a perm, I have no doubt, given what I have seen from my sisters and from my, you know, other people with my texture of hair, that it would have just not looked great on me unless I had Janet Jackson money. So, right. And time, right? So the thing about having processed hair is that you cannot half-ass it.
No.
Right? Like, it's you know, you baby hair and gel them edges. You
but
guys.
I'm not even sure that Gabby's hair is processed. We don't have to speculate. She might just have blowout. I'm not sure. She wears weave from time to time, yes, but that doesn't mean that her hair is processed.
Exactly. I don't know if her hair is processed. I will say this, that it appears processed. Mm-hmm. And so because of the appearance of it being processed, even if it's not, there's definitely this sense that a lot of Black women have, oh, that's not finished.
Right, right.
Right? So that's immediately where they go. And then a lot of it is very paternal. You know, like I was with a friend of mine in Haiti, and one of the things that she was talking about was like when her elders, who are women, come to her and say, you know, I wouldn't dress this way, or I wouldn't wear my hair this way, or I wouldn't do this, that it's coming from a place of love, even though it might be playing into respectability politics or playing into white supremacist ideas of beauty or whatever. It's still coming out of a place of you're my baby and I want to take care of you.
Okay. Well, they don't have to do it publicly on Twitter because they're taking away from the conversation that should be had about how unique this team is, how special it is, what Gabby has accomplished, what Simone Biles has accomplished. We also have a Simone Manuel that I got to give a shout out to. The first Black American woman, U.S. American woman, to win an individual swimming medal. And it wasn't just any medal. She went for gold. She tied for gold. She got that gold. Yes, yes.
Yes.
She had already won in the relay, and she took home an individual swimming medal last night. Then we have...
You're all up in the Olympics. Yes. Oh, my goodness.
I don't play. Look, I was a junior Olympian. Like,
not a junior Olympian.
Then we had... The only reason I'm not Olympian today is because I had an injury. And somebody was trying to tell me to get into mountain biking because bitches be old in mountain biking. I ain't too old for it yet. So how about that?
I have an old bitch just me in mountain biking, and it was humiliating. I was like, you know what? I no longer have a crotch after coming down that mountain on a bike. And you beat me by a good 20 minutes. Like, this is you. This is, yes. Okay, but go ahead.
I'm not going to edit that out. We also have Rafaela Silva, who I have to give a shout out to. Black woman from the favelas. I don't know why we use different words depending on where they are. It's just the slums. But anyway, the slum that became famous through the City of God film and series. First Black woman to win a gold. She won the first gold for Brazil, and it was in judo.
Lovely.
Judo.
Lovely.
These Olympics have been amazing. Mm-hmm. As far as diversity goes, we've seen a lot of out queer women, schooling folks on all fields, in hockey, on the court, beach volleyball, soccer. Mm. We're everywhere, and I'm proud of all of you. I'm excited.
Mm-hmm. I have a crush on a female Japanese volleyball team member. I'm going to, you know.
Okay.
Keep a secret, because most people discover her, she's going to be everywhere.
Okay, I need to know who that is. But we have to take a small detour. We won't spend too much time on it, but we have to make a small detour because yesterday, the Daily Beast felt need.
They needed some clicks.
They published the absolutely most unethical article in their history. And that's saying a lot for the Daily Beast. What is his name? Nick Hines, I believe. Nico Hines. I'm sorry. Nico Hines. He is married. I'm not even going to assume he's straight, but he is married with children. Mm-hmm. And he felt the need to download some apps and go through the village and see if he could arrange some hookups. And after he realized that Tinder was mostly used by heterosexuals, he was like, fuck Tinder, I'm going to Grindr. And then he published a piece that he might as well have used their names because it was so revealing the way he described the athletes. It was easy to Google them and figure out who he was talking about. And he basically outed athletes who, some of whom, live in distinctly homophobic, dangerously homophobic countries.
Yeah. And he was called on it by an athlete from Tonga, where it is illegal to be homosexual. Mm-hmm. He's an out gay athlete from Tonga where it's illegal to be homosexual. His name is Amini Afanua. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly. And he goes in, read this man to filth, and was like talking about how, you know, you're affecting whole families. He even outed an 18-year-old boy. You know, Amina talks about how when he was 18, he was nowhere near being ready to be out. And yeah, you know, this really struck me because this was probably the most profound takedown of outing other people that are not affecting your life, that are not affecting the public life that I've ever seen. Because when I came out, well, I came out as soon as I discovered my sexuality. I was about 21, you know, called my fundamentalist Christian mother as like one of my first calls, right? Like, so I'm at that level of, you know, gully, right? And I didn't have a lot of sympathy for closeted folks because I was just like, look, if I can come from this like fundamental Christian, West Indian, virulently patriarchal, homophobic place to just being like, this is who I am immediately as I discover it, then so can you. Mm-hmm. And that was such a, you know, young, naive mode of thought on my part, because people have situations that you're not privy to and they don't have the privileges that I had, right? For example, I could support myself. That's one thing. My job was not dependent on my sexuality. That's another thing. I didn't have realistic fear of bodily harm because of my sexuality. I was living in a metropolis. I was in Washington, D.C., right? So I had a community of queer people and people that were open to queerness around me, right? Like all of these things are things that I already had before I came out. So me coming out was coming out already from a place of privilege. And it's not something that I readily understood when I was that young. And I don't know if I would have ever understood it if I was like a straight person who was on some like, you know, it's a public app. Anyone can download this app. I'm just publishing it kind of mindset, right? Which I imagine was Nico Hines' mindset when
But he is a journalist and he can also click 3 times. Okay, leave out the journalistic standards. Mm-hmm. Leave out the violation of personal space, gay space, whatever. He can click 3 times and find out what the country's laws are when it comes to the lives of people who identify as queer, and know that he might have just put them in jeopardy, their family at jeopardy, anyone who's associated with them.
Yeah, people that have privilege don't even consider the level of danger for not having that privilege. You know, people that have human rights don't consider what it would be like to not have a human rights. I was in a place that didn't have potable water coming out the tap. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, you don't have that everywhere here either in the UK.
Ooh, y'all in Flint? Okay. I didn't know. Brexit hit y'all like that. My condolences. Damn. Seriously? Wow, UK, get it together. Y'all an island. Y'all surrounded by water. Get it together. Anyway, back to my thing. And, you know, I have a 9-year-old that I'm traveling with. And out of habit, he picks up a cup, puts it under the tap, turns it on. I'm like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm getting some water. I'm thirsty. I'm like, no, you're not. You're getting Giardia is what you're getting. And we don't have that here in Vienna. I drink water from the tap.
Right.
In America, I drank water from the tap. Probably reason for my lead poisoning, but you know, what I'm saying is, you know, when you have that level of privilege, you go to a place where it doesn't exist. You don't realize that it doesn't exist until you hit headfirst against the lack of it, which is what Nico Hines did. This does not excuse anything. I feel like I've just been devil advocate all day today, but this doesn't excuse anything that Nico Hines did. I think what he did was horrible. I'm so glad Amini came through and, you know, went ahead and did that. You're not outing a homophobic public official who's making policy that's affecting people's lives. You're outing private individuals that have done nothing to you. It's horrible. I'm glad that they took it down. I hope
there's the Wayback Machine. It's never reliably deleted, but at least they took it down and half apologized.
They half apologized?
In our second segment, August 9th marked 2 years since Mike Brown was shot to death by a Ferguson police officer named Darren Wilson, who later met with a grand jury who declined to indict him. And that man retired from the police force, probably because fundraising was so successful and he now has a soft cushion. I want to talk about the fact that 2 years after what... So, of course, Trayvon Martin's death is what marked the hashtag, so to speak, mm-hmm. Black Lives Matter. But I would definitely put the movement more with what happened after Mike Brown's death in Ferguson and what continues to happen. What we also saw was on Friday, August 5th, Black Lives Matter UK had a hashtag shutdown where they chained themselves to certain parts of the street in different areas. They blocked, for example, a big entrance coming off of the highway going into Heathrow. But they were also busy in other parts of the country. They were busy in Nottingham and Manchester and so forth. They also had some rallies in the evening. And we also saw a platform be released, which a lot of people have been waiting for. Something like 50 organizations affiliated with BLM in different and various ways came together to create a platform, a vision for Black lives that we will link to, that we've already linked to. And my question is, what has BLM done for us lately?
Ooh, so much. So much. I mean, like, BLM has definitely proven to me what I have always known, which is that Black people in their search for equal rights within America has been the moral center, the moral fulcrum of American morality, of American ethics, and is literally the fight for the American soul. And nothing proves that anything more than Black Lives Matter. They, before even they had this platform, mm-hmm. had turned a hashtag into a global movement. Mm-hmm. Black Lives Matter was being cited in South Africa. Mm-hmm. Black Lives Matter was being cited in England. It was being cited all over Europe. It was even being cited in Australia, right? Like, I mean, just to have Black Lives Matter be spread in this way in Brazil, no less, right? Mm-hmm. Where they have more sizable Black population than the United States, and they get killed at a much more alarming rate, probably something to the order of 10 times to the amount of police killings mm-hmm. than we have per capita. So that being the case, Black Lives Matter has been just a sliver of hope in the sea of all of the injustice that has happened. And it has centralized the outrage and the feeling of injustice that a lot of people have felt, and modernized the civil rights era, right? Like modernized and organized civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. So Black Lives Matter has done so much, not only modernized it in the sense of like bringing it into the digital era, associating it with our current conditions, but also modernizing it in the sense of like holding it up as a model of how to deal with patriarchy in organizations, how to deal with diversity, ableism, homophobia within organizations, mm-hmm. and make sure that you put marginalized voices forward. Black Lives Matter has done all of that. So, you know, for being a grassroots movement, I have never seen a grassroots movement that has had this level of sophistication. And I think that that comes primarily, of course, from the talent and the hard work that a lot of people have put into this, but also just from the passion and the urgency of the demands that Black Lives Matter has. Like, we don't really have time to fuck around, right? Like, we don't have the luxury of saying, yeah, I'm gonna make that website tomorrow. Right? And we don't. Like, people are dying. Mm-hmm. Right? I fully, fully, fully appreciate it.
I just want to let everyone know, like I said, we will link to it, but these are the six overarching themes that you can find on the Vision for Black Lives, what the demands are. One, in the war on Black people. You would think it'd be easy enough. Two, reparations. Three, invest, divest. Four, economic justice. Five, community control. And six, political power. And what I think is really interesting is that they do emphasize every step of the way that they know that these things alone are not enough. Mm-hmm. And they know that, you know, the platform is not perfect. That doesn't exist anyway. They mm-hmm. emphasize these things and they say at the same time, but we recognize that it is important to work all angles. You have to work from within a system to change it, and from the outside of the system to change it. And that's what I really appreciate, because I feel like too many times people who consider themselves, who self-proclaim to be radical, believe that being radical can only mean that you come from the outside of a system.
Oh, so you mean that burning shit down ain't part of the platform? Because I had proposed that and I was told it was seconded. But Okay. I got to reread.
No, it's not. But, you know, that's why on the one hand, it's important for people like Alicia Garza to go on television and get asked all the stupid questions that, you know, does Black Lives Matter condone the killing of 5 police officers in Dallas? Who expects Alicia Garza to go on television and say yes? Who expects that? No one. But she still has to do it, because to someone somewhere, it matters.
Well, I mean, there's been a massive spin machine that I think we've mocked and made fun of, a right-wing white supremacist spin machine in the United States that is so powerful and has funding and backing.
Oh, you mean the people who were trying to get BLM on the terrorist group?
Yeah. So even though they've been maligned and slandered by mainstream media, some like that have given voice to this idea that the reason why there might be any attack on the police is because of BLM, even though the alleged attackers that were Black have disassociated themselves from BLM and said that BLM is nonviolent and that ain't me.
Right.
Right. They've both said that. And the other attackers of the police are all white men. So I'm pretty sure it's not because of BLM they're being attacked by those white men. So I think that the fact that they've survived that and they're able to articulate for themselves who they are means that, you know, we're not in the era of the old COINTELPRO where, you know, with a couple of machinations, the, you know, FBI or the media can control the narrative about who a group is.
Well, what was interesting in the UK shutdown on Friday was the fact that, and you know, I never read comments because I meditate and I don't have high blood pressure and I want to live a decent life. So I stay out of comment. But it was inevitable to see on one video that was circulating on Facebook, you know, the comments of, oh, shut up, Black people don't have it any harder. I can't believe that you would hold up people's holidays in this way. Okay, first of all, everybody knows that not one person was delayed. Not one person missed their flight. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a public announcement that stated that it didn't lead to delayed flights. It didn't lead to people missing flights.
Mm-hmm.
It was an inconvenience and a minor one at that. So it was interesting to see those comments coming from, you know, from what I could see from profile pictures, white people who didn't understand. There's no context in their heads for Black Lives Matter movement in the UK. That has many reasons that I won't go into today because I don't want to lose our UK fans. They might hate me.
We gonna have to lose them sometime.
At the same time, I thought it was really interesting that people who were representing Black Lives Matter UK allowed themselves to be tipped into that binary in their interviews, where they said, of course, we don't have it as bad as in the States. I heard that on several interviews. Of course, we aren't experiencing what they are in the States. And that is very problematic.
A mutual friend of ours who's American, but recently she's lived all over Europe and has recently lived in the UK, did an amazing quote about from James Baldwin, because James Baldwin, as you know, is a Black American writer who moved to France and lived there for some time. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that he said was, someone really needs to study and publish a book or a piece about Black America in the imagination of Europe and how they deal with Black communities here. Because I feel like Black America and the situation of the civil rights and whatever is used as a straw man argument for neglecting the serious issues around a multicultural society that Europe has, and their own history of white supremacy.
And their own history of colonialism. I do not understand why people believe that. I think a lot of the time, people from the European continent feel really good about themselves because they weren't confronted with what was happening in the way that people in the Caribbean, South America, and North America were, because it wasn't necessarily happening in Europe. Mm-hmm. So there's a belief that there's some type of moral high ground, which is a figment of the imagination. I just found it interesting that, and it's only, you know, it's a small criticism, but I think it would be really important to not even fall into that narrative of, but it's not like in the States.
But you don't, you're not in the States. Like, we have to talk about our own reality. And I wish that they would just say that in response to every question, right? Okay, so here's the exact quote from James Baldwin. Someone someday should do a study in depth of the role of the American Negro in the mind and life of Europe and the extraordinary perils different from those of America, but not less grave, which the American Negro encounters in the old world. And I would, of course, say not just, end of quote, I'm sorry. And I would just say that it's not just the American Negro, but the Negro, right? Or Black person. He puts American before Negro because at that time there weren't many old world Negroes. And now we know. Yeah, we old world Negroes at this point.
Okay, so your summation is BLM has done a lot for us.
BLM has done a lot for us. Yes, yes.
And in our third segment, what are you excited about? What are you looking forward to? Okay, do a little jig. What's going on?
Oh, I'm excited about doing my next interview, which is exciting. I'm doing it with an artist here in Vienna, a Black artist who does an amazing portrait series where he does portraits of Black people living in Vienna.
And what type of, what does he use? Is it oil on canvas or is it spray paint? What are we talking about?
He uses some elements of graffiti, but oil canvas. Massive pieces, big canvas.
And is this a Black Austrian or is this someone with an immigrant background?
He's from Ghana and has been living here for some years studying at the Art Institute here. And yeah, it's just a fabulous artist. I'm so excited. What are you looking forward to?
We have bombastic weather happening in London this weekend again. Awesome. I'm not looking forward to much other than I might go disappoint myself and watch Suicide Squad. I know. How can I not watch it? It's got like Viola
and Will. Yeah, I miss Will. I miss him.
I do too. I feel like I gotta watch it, even though I mean they made good money the first weekend. It's probably gonna plummet now that the rate, you know, critiques have been so horrible. But I feel like I gotta go see it. And what I'm super still excited about is, and I hadn't even expected to watch it in this way, but I inhaled all 8 episodes of Stranger Things last weekend on Netflix because
I'm so afraid
of my podcast were talking about it. I had to do it. And all I can say is 11
out of 10. Is that what you mean?
No,
or is that like an inside comment?
You gotta watch it.
I don't have to watch it. And I can't because I have a little boy who is reckless.
And?
Right? So, like, that's always my fear is that he gonna, like, get abducted and become, like, a Stranger Thing. I don't want, it triggers. It
Your
triggers
tyrant
me.
Is already a Stranger Thing. So let's just be real. He is already a Stranger Thing. Because you have no excuses. Look, I cannot miss out on this. I am an 80s baby, and this is like an ode to the 80s of Stephen King and Steven Spielberg, like Goonies, E.T., all of it. It's just, it goes in on so many levels. It's like from like the opening theme music to the font that they chose, like how they filmed it. Ugh, the show, it's just, I could watch it all over again. Like, that's how much I loved it.
Wow. I mean, okay, so already on the bike ride home where the one kid is leaving the other kid and it's nighttime.
Yes.
My mommy was just like, I can't watch this anymore. Why are you leaving him? Y'all even got lights on these bikes? Like, where's your helmet? Where's your helmet? Y'all don't understand the buddy system. Racing time is not nighttime. This is not the time to have a race. Like, I've already got my horror dose. days.
I'm going to give you that.
Go in. And I was just like, I cannot. Why is this happening? Why are boys this way? I don't know. It's like, this is my daily struggle come to screen. And I feel like you're exploiting me and everything I stand for right now. I'm saying, I feel like you don't really understand who I am as a human being right now. Asking me to watch Stranger Things.
Wow. It was
I'm gonna have PTSD just from this podcast.
So yeah, Stranger Things and maybe Suicide Squad. I might regret it next week when we talk.
You probably would. I mean, like, just the tropes about women.
Yeah.
They missed, apparently they missed a major opportunity with the
Yeah,
that's too bad.
It is too bad. Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And if you have been enjoying these podcasts, which we're coming up very slowly but surely to our 1 year anniversary, and you'd like to support us, you can find us on Patreon, patreon.com/thequeertruth. We love your dollar donation a month. It would totally help us to keep making and sharing quality podcasts. Until next time, peace out.